Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Triathlon Age Group Journey. I'm your host, Jay Cunet, and we're here with Matt Sommer. And unfortunately, Jillian couldn't join us. The volleyball life has tapped her out tonight. But we're very excited today to have a guest, our Team Zoop Mid-Atlantic captain, Ashley Anderson. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you. Happy Sunday.
So awesome to have you. We've got a ball full of energy and determination with Ashley, so we're really excited to talk to you tonight. So this will be a great, great episode for us. We're going to go ahead and get kicked off with Matt's quote of the week, and then we'll get rolling with Ashley.
All right. Thanks, Jay. Ashley, excited to have you here tonight and can't wait to hear about your story and hear a little bit more about you. It was tough this week coming up with what quote to share. I had a lot of what I consider doozies this week, but one that really spoke to me the most, it's actually a quote from Mark Twain. He said, "The two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why." And that was pretty deep. And I really had to sit there and read twice. And I was like, wow. And obviously, you know, when I think about that one, this isn't necessarily training specific, but the day you were born, yeah, that's an important day. I mean, you come onto this earth and it's kind of like, here you are. But the day you figure out why. And I had to think about that. I mean, I thought really long and hard, like, was that board worthy? Because I have a whiteboard at work where I put these up. That made a lot of people stand there and kind of do that, And what I kind of followed that up with is you got to find your passion in life, because when you find your passion, you find your purpose. And that's kind of what that kind of meant to me, is you won't necessarily know right away what your purpose in life is. But if you follow your passion, whatever that might be, it's going to lead you to your overall purpose in life and how it affects you. And if you're lucky enough, it might become your profession. And that's kind of where I fell into that and was like, you know what? I love what I do. I've said that so many times that I get to help people exercise in every part of my life, whether it's the coaching side or whether it's the exercise physiologist side. I'm helping people work out to become better versions of themselves. And if that's my purpose in life and I enjoy it, and I'm passionate about it, I'm doing a lot better than most people. You know, I mean, if the worst part of my day is folding towels, I've got a pretty good gig going. So I don't know. Pretty deep thoughts with Matt Sommer. What can I say? I don't know. Ashley, what do you think about that? I know you're got a lot of energy. What do you feel about that one?
I feel like in hearing that quote initially, I was going through my head like, what moment in my life was a defining moment of like my purpose for being on this planet? And I think the reality is, and I think this is true for most anybody, if we really like dive into that quote, is that perhaps there isn't just one aha moment, that different stages, different environments, different relationships, different evolving passions, life trajectories, like you have little mini aha moments that build and snowball upon each other. And you learn like, okay, well, I learned this from this aha moment and I grew from here to get to this aha moment. And then perhaps all of those aha moments form a theme of why am I here? What gifts do I have? What talents do I have to share with other people? What do other people have to share with me? I had a horseback riding instructor who said that my success, so individual success, is as strong as the people around me, and that the people around me, their success is as strong as my success. And like Absolutely. That synergy of I guess, aha moment development in the different stages we find ourselves in the course of our lives. Like that just, you know, it's hard to pick one moment where you're like, yeah, this is my purpose in life. So it kind of made me think about different stages throughout my academic career, my triathlon career, relationships, things like that, where I'm like, yeah, like I learned here, I grew here, or I face planted here.
Yeah.
So it's a good quote. It's deep. It's meaty. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt, you outdone yourself with this one. This is too deep sometimes.
Yeah.
Twain's good for that. Twain yeah. can be witty. Twain can be deep.
Absolutely. And I think I'm going along with Ashley here. Our why changes, and maybe each why is just a step to that major why. I'm pretty strong in my faith. I think about how God is weaving a path through my life, and my belief is that others, it's getting woven through their lives too. And the why sometimes is too much to think about. I think about what we do in triathlon is, let's take an Ironman. You have to break it down in pieces. And each step, you're almost mentally working through your, why am I racing? Why am I here? Why am I doing this? I mean, you can imagine all the negative whys, but then we all have tons and tons of positive whys that are actually fueling us to the finish line. But then life is probably the same way. If we overwhelm ourselves thinking of the major why am I on this earth? Why was I born? As Mark Twain is maybe suggesting here, is that's a heavy, heavy lift. And you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time. And maybe that's right. What we really need to take away from this is keep just working on the why in the moment. Why are you there in that moment? What is it that your passion, your skills, your relationships are asking of you in that moment? And just move moment to moment, thinking of the why of the moment. So one day it'll get you to the big why, I'm sure.
Yeah. I know you're not going to be surprised by this, but I'm going to throw another one out there.
Oh, no. You're not allowed
Jillian's, to. Not me. We're all one decision away from a completely different life. And that's another one where it's like, I look back on some decisions and choices I made as a younger, more immature young man. And fortunately, I didn't get caught or I didn't get in trouble, but that could have completely changed the trajectory of my path and my life. And somebody might have been looking over me or had a guardian angel guiding me that day. And here we are, a completely different life from what it could have been. And to kind of echo Jay on what you were saying, I mean, I can go back to 2018 when we reconnected, and that changed the trajectory of my life, you know? And I can look at that and say that phone call and just reconnecting with you introduced me to TriDot, introduced me to where I am now, reconnected you and I. Put us in Lake Placid together, put us here on this podcast together. None of that ever would have happened, you know? And it's crazy how you can look back and just easily could have just discounted a text message or been like, yeah, whatever, you know? And it's like, here we are. So people are put in your path for a reason. And it's just crazy to think about it. I got so many quotes. It's like, you know,
you're
it's
not
like, don't ever
throw.
Yeah. Not
Come
a third.
On, you need to throw a third out.
I could. I got to find it. This is a good one. It's don't throw thorns on the path because you never know when you're going to have to walk back on it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good one.
I could do them all day. They just kind of come out. But anyway, so enough quotes. I think that one's deep though. You know?
I got to throw a sentimental thought is I don't think when we were shooting pool at the Top Hat Q Club over on York Road at the age of 16, because we were just finally allowed to go in there and shoot pool.
I know. Yeah.
We never would have been thinking of triathlon or a podcast, that's for sure.
Not at all. I know we were probably scheming other things we shouldn't have been scheming.
Probably, yes. My son listens to this, so you're not allowed to say any of that.
Yeah.
I heard nothing.
Yeah. Nothing.
I'm cutting.
Can't prove anything. Yeah. There's no social media to prove it. I mean, we didn't have social media or cell phones to prove anything, so we can deny it all we want. There might have been a Polaroid, but we burned it.
Yep. All right. Well, I alluded to Ashley's energy and determination. And Ashley, I want to just start, maybe get some of your resume out of the way so you can think more about triathlon. But I think it's very important that people know that you're extremely determined in your life. You have conquered a ton, I think, professionally. Yeah, graduated from Wake Forest University with health and exercise science with a double minor of biology and chemistry.
Cleared summa cum laude.
Virginia Commonwealth University School of Dentistry, and then and went to Charleston, and now you're in Virginia doing pediatric dentistry. And if I'm correct, it's you're doing a lot of surgery too in your dental practice. Is that a specialty of yours? How does that fit in?
So surgery is kind of a, I would say, a loose term. Oftentimes, if you're referring to, you know, my OR days. So I, as a pediatric specialist, see patients in a regular dental office. But oftentimes for our kids that are very medically compromised or from a behavioral standpoint or developmental standpoint can't sit or are safe for treatment in office, we have to have a different venue for treatment. And that's in a hospital setting where they can be sedated. They go under general anesthesia. So we work with an anesthesia team and we take care of all of their dental needs in one procedure. And so that kind of constitutes the dental surgery. So my degree is a DDS, a doctor of dental surgery. So I'm not necessarily like incising and suturing like I think most people when they hear the term surgery think of, but extractions, regular fillings, crowns, you know, minor soft tissue things all fall within my scope of practice. And then I am the quarterback of sorts dealing with a young developing patient, and if there's something that they need that I can't handle, then I throw the ball to other specialists within the dental sphere that help out with that. So it's a team approach from a surgery standpoint.
Gotcha. Well, following your socials and knowing just the pictures that you present from work, it's clear the kids must love having you, and you always seem to celebrate when they give you something nice. And I think if you were my dentist as a kid, I probably would go to the dentist more frequently myself.
So yeah.
Congratulations on that. You've definitely inspiring kids, I think, every day, which has got to be a lot of fun for you.
There's never a dull moment. You know, going through dental school, much like medical school, you're exposed and have rotations through all the different dental specialties, from oral surgery to periodontics, so gum doctors, endodontists, root canals, pediatrics, orthodontics, and so on and so forth. And I always tried to keep an open mind. My dad is an orthodontist, so I grew up, teeth were in the family.
Okay.
I always knew that I wanted to go into some form of human service, being a people person, being a very tender-hearted, warm, fuzzy goofball. And kind of watching my dad do what he does for a living. He loves his job. He loves connecting with the patients. And I think in dentistry, there's a unique opportunity, even though most people say, I hate going to the dentist, to have an ongoing relationship with your patients. You're not necessarily making life or death decisions for them. You are afforded an opportunity to have conversations, to, for me, you know, see kids grow up, become part of a family, and so on and so forth. And so as I was going through my rotations, I tried to keep an open mind, but when I hit my pediatrics rotation, everything was just, I always worked hard. I definitely had to come early, stay late when it came to academics and dental school, but pediatrics just kind of clicked with my personality. And I've heard other colleagues in my specialty say, you know, the dentistry is not too difficult. The variables are the behavior, the medical histories, the family dynamics, the child, whether they're going to be a sweet little angel in the chair or they're going to be a Tasmanian devil in the chair. And you have to be equal parts magician, coach, sometimes parent, comedian, all of those things. And it is just so rewarding. And yes, like any job, there are days where I go home and I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? But, you know, more often than not, 9.5 times out of 10, it's just, there is never a dull moment. The kids are very, very honest little beings.
Yeah.
And they keep you on your
toes. They keep it real.
I had a patient last week. She was trying to guess everyone's age in the room. And she looked at me and she said, Dr. Ashley, I think you're 47. And I said, well, you officially have a cavity in every tooth in your mouth. I said, why do you think I'm 47? And my hair, the purple had kind of come out of it. So it had like a silver gray tint to it. She goes, well, your hair is gray. And I said, it's fake gray. It doesn't mean that I'm old. But, you know, it's moments like that. It's the moments where a child comes to you with something that they drew, or they come in tears and they leave clinging to your leg, giving you a hug. You know, I love what I do. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
There's always something to learn.
I want to
passion
have a really lame segue here from dentistry to triathlon. What's your opinion about our sugar gels and the type of junk we eat during a race? And what are we doing to our teeth in the long term as triathletes? Do you have an opinion on that?
It's job security for me, friend.
That is a great answer.
The fact that you just brought that up, I saw a product the other day that advertised that it uses xylitol for sweetener. And it actually, the advertisement was promotes tooth like health, was part of what they were promoting as in the sports supplement was promotes oral health.
Wow.
And, I mean, would you agree with that, Ashley? I mean, does...
So, this is funny you bring this up because I was doing some continuing ed this afternoon because I'm a huge nerd. And I was reading an article on xylitol. And xylitol is not as easily metabolized by the cariogenic or the cavity-causing bacteria in your mouth. So, yes, there is validity to that.
What about your stomach and intestines and...
But it does a number on your GI tract. So a lot of the studies out there are very inconclusive. There's some evidence, obviously, to suggest that it doesn't hurt the mouth as much, you know, as consuming other natural sugars and things. But the one thing that seems to be a recurring theme is, like, it tears up your belly.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. Good to know.
There
yeah.
Keep that
read your labels. Read your labels. So
read those ingredients.
Yeah, that's important.
So, Ashley, you want to give us a rundown of your triathlon story? If I missed anything that you'd like to also sprinkle in, I have some other questions that might bring that up later. But you just rock and roll. Tell us how you got into triathlon, and then catch us up to today on what you've done, and then we'll start talking about the future too.
Okay, sounds good. I love triathlon is a short version of the story. It's been a blessing in my life. It's brought wonderful people into my life. I think 6-7 years ago, if you asked me, would I be where I am now in this crazy sport, I would say absolutely. That's funny. Like, who goes and races over 100 miles like for fun and pays money to do that? That's insane. I grew up in a very active family. I'm the youngest of three kids. My brother was a three-sport athlete. We were always on the go doing things. I don't consider myself, never really consider myself athletically gifted. I just hustle. I work hard. If I don't know, and this extends outside of sport, if I don't have the answer, I go find it or I go find someone to help me. I have no problem asking for help. I have, as long as that help leads me to be independent and self-sufficient. I am a doer. My mom says I'm a mover and a shaker, but I was never, I just worked hard. You know, I played basketball growing up. I made varsity as a freshman because I was the tallest option that they had. I was fast. I was scrappy, but not going to college to play basketball. My main sport growing up was competitive horseback riding. And that was something I did have a talent for. It's like triathlon. It consumes your life. It's a lifestyle. Lots of mornings at the barn, weekends, show season was the same season as triathlon. You know, there's the responsibility of taking care of the horse. And that was a big, big part of my growing up, my athletic background, you know, our family experiences, my relationship with my horse. I call him the stable man of my life outside of Jesus and my dad and brother. I had to put him to sleep. He did pass a year ago, and that was tough. They become like family, but that was my big athletic outlet. So as I continued throughout my schooling, specifically end of college, beginning of dental school, I need something. I need to stay active. So I got into running. Where I lived in Richmond, Virginia, when I was at VCU for dental school, was right near this beautiful path, run trail.
Down by the river?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
Belle Isle, Browns Island, if you're familiar with that area of Richmond. Yeah. And I just would hop on that and just go. And racing, swimming, but none of that was on my radar. I think I wrote in my bio, I swam for our local YMCA for a summer when I was 8, like every other kid in our neighborhood. And it wasn't until kind of the prompting of one of my favorite attendings in dental school, who was also a runner, that I got into racing. And so I did the Richmond Half Marathon in 2014. I think my longest run was maybe like 6 miles. Like limited training, had no idea what I was getting into, and ended up going like sub two. And I was like, maybe I found a sport that I'm like good at. And so this attending, his name is Dr. Embry, and I raced a couple of other half marathons together, and it became like a competition with one another. I'm very competitive. You have to pick up on that. And so distance running was kind of how I started drinking the Kool-Aid, if you will, of endurance sports. And when I moved to Charleston, kind of same thing. I needed an outlet. I was the only resident, not married with kids. We had six of us total. So 3 first year, 3 second year. And I knew nothing about Charleston, nothing about the area. And I, coming from a very close-knit family, I seek community and I seek friendships and getting involved and plugging in. And before I moved to Charleston, I wrote down like a bucket list of things. If I'm only going to be in this city for 2 years, I'm going to maximize my time there and learn something about the art of ministry too. And so triathlon was just very accessible, very apparent down there. And there was one shop in particular called Blue Sky Endurance. And I remember walking into the shop one day and having great conversation with the people that work there and thinking, I kind of want to get into this triathlon thing. This looks kind of cool. So I got like an 8-speed felt, a bunch of spandex, and I knew, I was like, I can definitely run. This whole clipping in thing terrifies me. And I know I don't drown when I swim. Like, this, let's get into this.
You had
and
it all.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I also knew I had no idea what I was doing. So I reached out to a friend of mine from Wake Forest, Greg Grosicki. He was a master's student when I was an undergrad. And I said, hey, like, I know you do Ironman competitions. Do you coach? If so, like, send help.
And send help.
He emailed back and sent me his questionnaire about my background and stuff like that. And he said, look, let's do a test run. I'll coach you up for, at the time I was registered to run the Charleston Half Marathon that January. So still very like run focused. And he said, if you like my coaching style, then we can talk as far as pricing and how this all pan out. So anyway, homeboy coaches me up. I PR by like 13 minutes, finishing like an hour and 34. Like,
wow. Just ran
something stupid.
You're moving.
And I swear,
that's smoking.
There was like a tailwind that day. Don't get excited, guys. And I was like, dang, like I got my first taste of like, maybe I am athletic. Okay. And so it just kind of snowballed from there. Charleston had a 5-race sprint series every summer. And so my first taste of racing was at the sprint distance. Fun fact, my first race was one of the Charleston Sprint Series. I ran the wrong direction the first race. Got so excited. And I ran farther than I was supposed to. I still finished second in my age group. But
nice.
Being very like much a rule follower, I finished and I went straight to the race director. And I was like, I am so sorry. I ran off course. I don't know what to do. I feel like I need to tell somebody. And so she had to like, I guess, consult with officials. And anyway, I got disqualified because I ran off
course. Oh, man. Yeah.
You're not the first person on our podcast to go the wrong direction.
No.
So don't feel bad.
So it makes me like, when I go to like some of these bigger races,
study up.
I drive the bike course.
You so double check now. Yeah. Yeah.
Good lesson learned.
Not going to get burnt again. Second race, I had vengeance and fire under my butt to redeem myself.
And competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. I wiped out hard on the bike, slipped on some gravel. The roads were kind of wet. And I sustained some pretty significant injuries that I learned of after the fact. But being very determined and very pigheaded, I looked, I was like, all right, my kit's ripped, I'm bleeding, nothing's broken, the bike's okay, let's go. And so I ended up still racing. I placed in my age group and went straight to the medical tent this time. Ended up sustaining a hairline fracture to my pelvis.
Oh, wow.
It was in a non-weight bearing area. So per my orthopedic doc down there, that's why I could still walk and, whatnot. Yeah. And then I had some soft tissue issues and a very long recovery. So that's how I became a good swimmer. That was the only thing I could do.
So this was your second triathlon?
Second race.
So you've met an athlete. You've met the race director at race one, which many of us have probably never met a race director.
Right.
And you've been at the medical tent by number two. So you've getting all the boxes checked pretty quickly.
And she's and she podiumed at the
and
second
podium,
one.
That's right. That's
Good job.
All right. Yes.
So I
can only get better.
it does get better.
It does.
The story has a happy ending.
Absolutely.
I at that time had a long recovery. I had my first marathon on deck. That all that happened over the summer. My first marathon was the Charleston Marathon that following January, and I just thought my goose was cooked, like not going to happen. And my goal was to try to qualify for Boston. Pipe dream. And so my coach and I just allowed recovery to happen, trusted the process. I think my longest run was 18 miles one time. I did a lot of high volume swim, a lot of biking, and ended up running a 3:28 first marathon and got my BQ.
Nice.
I did miss the lottery that year by a couple seconds, but at that point in my journey, I was transitioning more to triathlon, and my coach and I had a discussion. He's like, marathon training and triathlon training are very difficult, especially at the long course level, which I was transitioning to. I had Augusta 70.3 on deck at the time. And he said, with your injury history and, where we're at in terms of your kind of, you're still very green to endurance sports, you need to pick triathlon versus distance running. And so I went to the dark side and raced Augusta 70.3 after graduating residency. After my first season of racing at the sprint level and the Olympic level, that Charleston race series had kind of an age group division and they had an open elite division. And my second year racing down there, my coach pushed me to race the open elite and I ended up winning the series,
awesome.
That summer. So that was a good send off to graduate and then to get into, to podium in that way. So, once I finished residency and moved back to Virginia, started the long course chapter of my journey with Augusta. Then of course COVID happened. And around that time frame was when I joined Zoot at the conclusion of my residency. So my second year in Charleston. And that, Zoot, as you guys know, is such a wonderful community of people. And my coach was the one that prompted me to apply for a team. And at the time I was like, I'm not good enough to be on a team. Like, what are you talking about? I've only been racing for a year or so. And he said, no, just like see what's out there. And so my mom had gotten me a Zoot kit for my Ironmans, air quotes, that I was racing down in Charleston. She thought every race was an Ironman. And I thought, okay, well, they have a team. Like, let's see what it's about. And of course, we know how all that ended. And so that's kind of the initial stage of my journey. And now here we are, I guess, 6 years later, and I've had three full distance races under my belt. Waco World Championships in St. George in Arizona, training for my fourth in Tulsa in May. And then a handful of 70.3s, Augusta, Eagleman, 70.3 Worlds, did that twice. An Eagle Man a second time as well, and transitioning more towards long course, as you guys can probably pick up on, and have loved every part of the long course journey since.
Nice.
I think what jumps out at me the most is you are one busy gal. I know we're friends on social, and I see a lot of times you're great about stories, and I'm always like, I always think I'm up early. And like, I wake up at 4, and when I wake up, a lot of times you'll already have a story posted of your feet in the pool. And I'm just like, I'm still wiping the sleep out of my eyes, and I'm just like, good Lord. And I mean, you train hard. I mean, most days I see it's like you swim, then you lift, and then you bike, and then I see you lifting heavy things, barbells. I love the chucks, by the way. Those are great. Then I see you at work, and then I see you balancing social life and everything. And I'm like, I think I'm busy. And then I look at your schedule, and I'm like, okay, she's busy. How do you balance all that?
It's a delicate balance. I joke that triathlon is my second full-time job. And there is like 200% accuracy to that statement. It is a very delicate balance. And I remember talking to Morgan Lattimore one time about balance. And he told me that balance is bullshit. I don't know if you need to edit that out or not, whatever. Nope. It's a PG-13 podcast.
Yeah,
we're good. That there is harmony. That all of the different facets of your life, it's never that everything is in balance. It's that some things get more attention at certain points because they need it, and other things get less attention. And all of that is a dynamic equilibrium. And that's what I look at all of my pillars that make up the foundation of who I am and what I do on a day-to-day basis, triathlon, so health and wellness from an athletic standpoint, my professional pursuits, my personal relationships, my spiritual life, my faith is very important to me. So, you know, all of those things, you know, my family, making time for people outside of sport and things outside of sport. It's hard. And I don't get it right all the time. And there certainly have been moments in my life where I have to take a breather because triathlon takes too much of that harmony when it doesn't. And that's, I think, being completely transparent, having an outlet is great, but also being able to recognize when that outlet's becoming a crutch is a sign, I think, of athletic maturity. And that's something that I have learned as I have grown in my professional career, having a big girl job and not being in school anymore and not being a resident and being under the umbrella and being able to fall back into the safety net of that. But being a professional and working in a hospital and working with other doctors and being responsible for patient care means that I have to make sure that I am leaning on what I need to lean on for that particular whatever's going on in my life. So a lot of early mornings, and that's one thing I would say in the balance sometimes that suffers, and something that I've learned that I need to make sure that I'm consciously getting is sleep. So if I'm waking up early, I have to go to bed early. And some days that works and I can do that. Other days I come home and I've got work stuff to do. And that just means maybe sleeping a little bit longer in the morning and pushing my workout to the afternoon, right, or listening to my body and giving it a day to just chill out, which is hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do when you are goal oriented.
Yeah.
But I've learned the consequences of not listening to my body.
Yeah.
So a lot of early mornings, I'm usually up at 4. I either have Mondays are usually recovery days and lifting. I do heavy lifting 2 days a week with a strength coach. My strength coach, his name is Duron Flood. He's here in Norfolk. I love him to death. Strength training has made a huge difference in my performance, yes, but my resilience in terms of coming back from injury, injury prevention. I would say that's probably been the biggest pivot in my training is the incorporation of regular heavy lifting. So I do that in the evenings on Mondays and Thursdays. So a lot of two-a-days make this process happen. So I'm up early. I do something in the morning, if not two things in the morning. I come home. Sometimes I'll have something in the afternoon or not. And then, of course, I have my strength training 2 days a week. And then the weekends are when I get the bulk of my volume done. Over the course of trying to train for fulls and work full-time and be in the healthcare field, I've had to work with my coach and kind of tell him, hey man, I can't take all this volume and maintain my sanity, maintain my health, get sleep. Can we decrease my volume on the weekdays and increase my intensity. And so that's been kind of a change in this season in particular, because I got to a point of burnout last year. Right. I had a lot of health stuff going on, which, you know, I've been pretty open about, that kind of ate away at my energy. And that was in the harmony of things that took more energy last year to get the right, you know, medical help and medications on deck and diagnosis and things like that. But, you know, in moving forward in this season, you know, I told Greg, I said, look, like, I'm healthy again, but last year I was tired because I had systemic stuff going on, but also the amount of volume and just the eating. I was trying to eat the elephant instead of in one bite, as opposed to little pieces. And I got to a point where, you know, this should be joyful. This should be an outlet for the most part. And it was, I was starting to kind of, my alarm would go off in the morning. I'm like, oh my God, I can't, like, I just want to go to bed. Like, you know, and that was a wake up call for me that my harmony was not harmonious anymore, that something needed to change. And so I think the point of all of this, you ask how I do it, it's being honest. It's being honest with what you have going on, what you can handle, what your body needs, what your spirit needs, what the people in your life need from you and what you need from them. It's also having ears that are attuned to listen to all of those things. Athletic maturity, you know, being able to realize that taking a rest day that you're not supposed to isn't going to kill you. In the long run, it's probably going to be beneficial. And then for me, realizing that sometimes I follow my own advice that I just provided, and other times I'm like, nope, and I keep going. And you're going to have days like that too. So, you know, that's kind of how I do it.
I love the word harmony. I use the word balance a lot, but I like that word harmony. I might have to start using that one or steal that, because working out makes me a better father. It makes me a better fitness director, makes me a better coach, because they all affect each other. And I find that I feel better when I'm exercising, but like you said, it can become a crutch. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing of, why are we doing it? It's like, are you using it almost as medication to mask something, you know, like some void in your life? There's a thin line. You're exactly right. And I think being well balanced, or in harmony, as the word that we're going to use moving forward, I like that. I mean, everything you just said, and kind of putting it all in, I wanted to say balance again, but in harmony, and the way they interact with each other. But that's good. Now, definitely a demanding schedule. You've got a busy race schedule, obviously, coming off last year, and it sounds like you got a couple big events coming up this year. I don't want to steal the thunder, but tell us about the races that you got coming up this year, your goals, your aspirations, and like what's on deck here in the next few months.
So, like falling off my bike in Charleston and coming back with vengeance, that's kind of how I feel going into 2021, I would argue, was probably one of my strongest seasons, you know, in terms of how I felt metrics wise, numbers. I PR'd at Eagleman, ran 5:07, was really happy about that, podiumed for the first time in an iron distance race, qualified for half distance worlds, did my first full, qualified for full distance worlds in St. George. So just, you know, AWA, silver, whatever, up, you know, on cloud nine. And then in January of 2022, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which is in the Crohn's family. There are a lot of different reasons why people get it. The etiology is kind of all over the place, but the thought is that it is slightly autoimmune. And so essentially my immune system has as much energy as I do, except it decides to attack my GI tract. And so there were a lot of symptoms, a lot of just days of not feeling good, a lot of just trying to get medication, figure out what sorts of medications my body would take to. My body rejected a lot of and became non-responsive to a lot of medications. And so in all of that, I'm still trying to train because I'm stubborn and determined. And I was like, screw this. I am going to figure out how to deal with my medical issue, but I'm also going to keep my full race schedule. I've got worlds, I've got goals, like no stopping me. And 2022, while I did still cross the finish line at Worlds in St. George, I finished every race that I started. From a metric standpoint, those races were all struggles. I was able to train not to the capacity that I should and was formerly able to, because my body just couldn't handle it. My body was healing, and I had to listen to it and scale back and learn to be okay with being appreciative for what my body could do and the fact that I could still train and race, albeit to a much lesser extent. And I think, you know, we talked about aha moments, a defining moment last year that kind of set the tone for 2023 and goals this year was at Worlds in St. George. I had a great swim. I can always bank on the swim. I always tell people, like, no guarantees after I get out of the water. But that course was brutal. The conditions were brutal. I suffered a lot on the bike, but on the run, I've never had the thought of, am I going to make the cutoff time? Ever. It's never been on my radar. And that night, I had to stop so many times. I mean, at one point, like, an EMT came over to me and was like, do you need to be pulled off the course? I'm like, get away from me. You're going to have to catch me if you're going to pull me off of this course.
I'm like, you got to catch me.
I ended up walking with this man that I had played cat and mouse with on the bike prior to. His name, we're still great friends to this day. His name was Luis. He is from Mexico. And he has done now like 200 Ironman races. I mean, wow. Something crazy. And he told me, he saw me struggling, and he was like, look, if you keep trying to run, you're gonna send your body into more orbit than it is now. He's like, if you walk with me and we walk fast, we can still make the cutoff time. And I'm like, and I'm still trying to process the whole thought of, right, like, trying to make the cutoff time. And at that moment, I realized, like, cool your jets. You made it here. You are dealing with a lot right now. You need to give yourself grace. And that's something I am very bad at. And from that point on last year, no matter how my body was doing from training to racing, I had a similar experience that I did qualify at Eagle Man for 70.3 Worlds this year back in St. George. I'm like a frequent flyer out there in Utah now. It never gets any easier. I've been out there 3 times now. And, you know, I had a similar experience there. And instead of getting upset, I high-fived people. I kept smiling. I did not care. I walked the majority of that half marathon. Had a good swim. It was just fun. Right. And that's the juju that 2022, I wouldn't trade. So, yeah, no, last year really sucked from a how I felt standpoint. But for the lessons that I learned and the opportunity and the permission that I gave myself to have grace and to realize that this is fun, this is not meant for burnout, it just completely changed my outlook on racing and my why. And so while I have goals and things that I want to accomplish next year, I am so grateful for how last year turned out in a weird sort of way. And so I have a lot of fire under my belt or under my butt to achieve these things next year. But at the heart of it, I want to make sure that I don't lose the spirit that I found last year, which was high-fiving and having fun and taking time to give hugs and make jokes and all those fun things.
So, actually, this is I'm so glad you got to this story, because this was really why I wanted you on, because you had demonstrated what we've talked about almost gratitude. every single episode about gratitude and how it's the secret fuel to get to across any finish line, no matter how you're feeling. And you proved it in the darkest of times right there. It's awesome. Congratulations, because it takes years sometimes to learn that, you know?
Yeah. And there are days where it's easier than others. I won't lie. I felt more embarrassed last year, I think, in processing my performances from going from feeling good and it showing to, like, setting these expectations or feeling like I had some sort of expectation to meet at these races and then just pooching them from a number standpoint. I realized, like, my coach always tells me, he's like, triathlon is something that 98% of the population could never do, and 99% of them don't really care about. And I keep that, like, jokingly in the back of my mind, but it's like, this is you versus you. This is you going out, doing something that you love with the community that you love. And you've got to keep that at your heart. And I think being close to rock bottom last year from a health standpoint and from just a lot of different things that were going on in my life, I realized that just how grateful we need to be for the baseline opportunity that we have. I tell people all the time, I see so many little people who have at work every day who have, I look at their medical histories or am privileged to information about their home lives. And I think you have gone through more in your 4 years of life on this planet than I have in my 32. And it's just, I think about my patients. I think about the really, really sick kids that I've had the opportunity to treat, or just different things from a work standpoint and patient standpoint. And it, you know, we get so focused on qualifying for things or PRs or just metrics that we forget how much of a privilege we have to put one foot in front of the other, to get up and train in the morning, and to do that with such a great community of friends and people. So I'm thankful that 2022 reminded me of all those things and that I get to carry them into next year. So now I get to actually answer your question. So I've got Tulsa at the end of May is my big race. Lord willing, I'm going to do a local half marathon, the Shamrock Half Marathon, in March. Prior to that, if everything from a biomechanical standpoint is not popping and locking, as long as it's working.
Right.
It's been a journey to get healthy again. And I am officially in clinical remission from my UC. I have a couple more tests and biopsies to undergo this month, the end of the month. But from a clinical standpoint, I'm in remission. So I'm feeling better and training better.
Awesome.
So it's God is good all the time. So I've got Tulsa. And then after that, Eagle Man 70.3, Oregon 70.3. That's our Zoot Captain's showdown. And nice. So I'm hoping to be the first one out of the water. We'll see.
It's a fast swim.
I'm so excited. And then depending on what happens in Tulsa, maybe something in October. We'll see. If not, nice. I've got Atlantic City and then Ironman Arizona at the end of the season.
That's a long season. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lengthy one. And I missed racing locally last year, and I got started in this whole journey racing locally. So I've got some local races, some Olympics on deck in the Virginia area as well. And then we have a really great open water swim series that our lifeguard association puts on at Virginia Beach every year. There's a 1 mile, a 3K, and a 5K. And so I'm going to do that too.
Awesome. Obviously, on top of all of that, as team captain for Zoot Mid-Atlantic, I mean, you sit around, do nothing. But I'm sure that carries a ton of responsibility just with all the races, coordinating events. Go a little bit into all your duties that carries.
So for any Zooters listening, disclaimer, I do not have any Garmin codes, okay?
The new process is so much better for you.
That is hilarious. I swear, like every other Facebook post is Garmin code, Garmin code, Garmin code.
Oh my god. I submitted an application, air quotes, for Zoot, my second year racing, and made the team, and then was asked to take over as Mid-Atlantic captain after 70.3 Worlds last year. So this is my second season as captain. And I remember when I got the call from Brian Dunn, who is out in Arizona asking if I would take the reins, I like literally happy cried on the phone. I was so like, I absolutely love this team. I think that we, albeit our large size, you know, we're huge. We embody that community and that family feel that I found and experienced when I first got into this sport in Charleston. That's what community is what drove me to pursue this whole crazy sport when I was down in South Carolina, and community is what I found in Zoot. When I first moved back to Virginia, you know, my first friends that I made were Zooters. And we have remained close despite moves and distance and things like that. And of course, you know, you go to a race and you see people in the Zoot gear and you're like, oh, Zooter, oh, where are you? Okay. You know, instant friends. So being able to share my love for triathlon and the community that it's allowed me to find in the context of our team as team captain was a huge honor. I felt like I had won like Miss America or something. And our region is massive. We've got Virginia, North and South Carolina, West Virginia, Tennessee, Delaware, DC, Maryland. And so when I took over, my number one priority was to build community and to build connections. And so I knew that I could not do it alone. And as I mentioned earlier, if I don't have the answers, I go find them. And so I recruited state representatives, a handful of people per state, to help be my boots on the ground and to help start to build our web of community. Because I think that that is probably one of the most recurring, wouldn't say complaints, but themes that comes up in Zoot discussion is how big we are. And a lot of times people get lost in the sauce. And, you know, like triathlon, what you get, what you input is what you output, or, you know, what you get in return. And so you're always going to have those people who don't engage and therefore they don't feel that web of connectedness. And so my whole platform to start last year was to start building connections and communication and to make people, to welcome people into the Ohana and into the fold. And I think that we've done a good job of that in the Mid-Atlantic. And I'm always encouraged and inspired and amazed to see different people coordinating meetups and other things like that. So being a part of this team and now being able to kind of be at the helm, but be supported by so many wonderful state leaders as well, is just, it's a part of my why. It's a part of what gets me to the finish line. I remember I did Arizona in November, and it was a little sketchy whether or not that was a good idea, but decided, well, I am breathing, I have a pulse, everything kind of works, we're going to start and see what happens. And it was, I mean, swim and bike were actually really good. And then the run, the first part of the run was really okay. And the back half, I made a lot of friends walking. And I remember rounding, and I think two of my most favorite race moments happened at that race. And one was John Ramey, the SoCal captain, his daughter, McKenna, she's 6. She wants to be a pediatric dentist and a dentist for animals in outer space when she grows up. So we were talking in the course of the weekend about what it meant to be a dentist for kids. And she made me a little sign that said, "Go Ashley." And when I passed their tent, their cheer tent, I ran past, waved to everybody. And then I get a little bit farther past the tent and I hear this, "Ashley!" And I turn around and it's McKenna. And she ran up to me and I stopped and I gave her a big hug and just kind of chatted with her for a little bit. And I had not cried that entire race, but I happy cried at that moment just to share, to just take the time and always remember, like, you always have time for the people that are supporting and encouraging you. So that was number one. And number two, and this kind of, I guess, ties into the point of my story, is that at the very end, as I was rounding the corner to go to the finish line, all the other captains were waiting and they all ambushed and gave me a hug. At that time, I didn't give a shit about my finish time. And so we stood there and happy cried and they all huddled and jumped around me. And I lost it. And
oh, man.
happy cry. That's awesome. Entire way down to the finish line. And it just, you know, I remember crossing and thinking, that's my why. Mm. That's why I love leading this team, is moments like that. And, you know, I hope I get to do that again this year.
Yeah. It's so important to find your people in life, you know? And, you know, one of the things I always talk to my athletes about, and I think you just really brought this point home, is you can have, and you talked about expectations, and I'm a firm believer, and we all know this, expectations create disappointment, no matter where it is in your life. And I think that's kind of what happened in your 2022, was 2021 set expectations, and here we are. And at the end of the day, when you crossed that line in Arizona, it didn't matter. You had no care. It was the people around you and the joy and the happiness that they brought you and you brought them. And I think if we stop focusing, kind of like you said, on our time, our performance, and enjoying the process and having fun and smiling, the other stuff comes. The other stuff will come when we stop worrying about it. I look back, some of my best performances were my carefree ones, where I went out and just had a good time. It's great that you've found those connections, and you foster those connections is the other thing that I've learned about you, is you are a people builder, a community builder, and that's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah. You know, I want to take a moment and talk about the relative luck you have that race day turns out perfect. If you're on a 20-week training plan, that's 140 days, and those 140 days aren't all perfect, and the likelihood that race day comes and you are not ill, not injured, that it goes perfectly, is so remote. So
yeah,
if you have 5 races a year or 3 or 4, whatever it is, and you get to all starting lines and all finish lines, you hit the jackpot. And when you think about the lottery of triathlon, I mean, that is something you just have to maintain perspective of if you want a long life in this sport. Otherwise, if you have any other expectation, you'll quit after 6 years, 10 years, because you got the wrong relative perspective of how you got to endure it. So, I mean, what a great story. I'm just like floored on the number of whys you've learned already, Ashley, in a short period of time in triathlon. I mean, in relative short time and success. And I love the St. George story of the why. And then you exude it with Team Zoot. I mean, I was on Team Zoot before you were captain, and the change that happened the day you arrived was like a complete light switch of a team that had a leader that was going to bring family to Zoot, because we didn't have that prior to that, or at least in my experience. So the other thing is, you're doing it in such a way with the different lifestyles all triathletes have, that we all can find our connection. In my case, I can never make the meetups because I'm that guy that's showing up like 2 hours before check-in and getting my bike on the rack because I've squeezed a race in for life, and I'm, you know, camping and packing up my camping gear and finishing and going home because there's something at home waiting. So I always miss the meetups, but at the same time, you're all there. I can say hi, say wave, but I don't feel any pressure about it. And I think that's the balance you've struck really well with welcoming everybody in. And I hope you get way more accolades than those negative Garmin code emails. I hope people are thanking you every day for doing what you do to guide us. And I think your call on the state reps was a really great move to help delegate your workload too, because I'm getting to know the ones that are out and about talking, setting up meetups on Zwift and other things. So that's helping a guy like me at 4 a.m. or whatever hour, right, to find a connection, because Matt and I might have more lonely days out there than we have time to connect with somebody. So it's awesome.
One other thing that I'll point out, and I know our listeners can't see this, but this entire time, you've smiled. The entire time, you have sat there with a smile from ear to ear. I think that is part of what is just so refreshing and the energy that you bring, you know? And I think doing it with a smile is one of the things I try to tell my athletes is like, do it with a smile, smile every mile. It makes it that much more enjoyable. You know, I think that's big. And not every day's roses. We all have our Walmart moments. It's not Disney moments all the time, as I call them. And it's just making the best of everything. And, you know, I appreciate the smiles. I appreciate the energy. It's contagious. Again, here comes another quote. It's one of those, it's like, don't adapt to the energy in the room, influence the energy in the room. Mm-hmm. And you're an influencer, no doubt. You're an influencer.
Definitely.
Big time. So, yeah. Awesome.
So, I'm just showing off because I remembered to fly today. I forget sometimes.
That is, oh boy. Well, thank you for saying that. I feel so much better hearing a dentist say that. I have my 6 month checkup on Wednesday, so looking forward to that.
I love the dentist. You know why? Because I can take a nap. Like I always fall asleep. As soon as that weighted blanket gets put on me, I'm out cold. It's amazing. I sit there and then the hygienist tries to talk to me and I'm like, huh? Like, you know, so I don't need sedation. They just lay me. Sometimes it's the only 30 minutes that I get to lay down during the day and I'm out cold. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It is great.
Then I drool and I'm like, oh man, I'm sorry.
Spit happens. It's fine.
Yes, I like it. Spit happens. Nice. So
that rolled right off your tongue too.
Uh-huh.
That's good. All right. Well, we'll probably have to land the plane here. This has been awesome, Ashley. You get the Hustle Award big time. No question about
Hands
it.
Hands down.
And
unanimous.
Yep, indeed. We certainly miss Jillian this week, but we'll definitely have her next week for everybody. And if you have any comments or want to send us any triathlon tips, we did get a few in our comments. We'll probably hit those next week because we're out of time probably today. I think we're way past our bedtime, to be honest. All we were talking about 4 a.m. wake ups, and I'm looking at the clock saying, okay, it's going to be an extra hour less than normal.
It was worth it, though. This was totally very worth well worth it.
Totally worth
totally.
It.
Totally.
So if you want to email us, it's triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com and @triathlonagegroupjourney for Instagram. Ashley, thank you so much. This was awesome having you on.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ashley.
Yep.
All right. We'll talk next week.